Nathan Williams on monitor with his Barocca Nova. Song. Morgan here. We'll learn the results of a Gallup poll on teachers in this half hour. Has striking hurt their image? Have we changed in our regard for teachers? Well, I know I'm not as scared of them as I used to be in the fourth grade, but then none of them seem as big as Mrs. Baumgartner did then. Okay, class, come to order. Listen to the U.S. Double Quartet, Walking Along and Happy Wanderer.
Walking Along.
My mother's for Thanksgiving, right?
No. Last year was at your mother's. This year, mine.
No, dear, you forgot. Dinner this year is at my mother's.
But what'll I tell my mother?
Just call an FTD florist and send some Thanksgiving flowers with a card.
Do we usually send flowers for Thanksgiving?
Well, why not? Flowers tell someone you're thinking of them. What could be a better time than Thanksgiving?
Why don't we just eat at my mother's and tell her in person?
Send the flowers. Oh, and send some to my mother, too, for the dinner table.
No, you're right. I'll call our FTD florist now. Yeah, but how will I know what to send?
Just ask him. He has flowers for any occasion.
I hope my mother likes them.
She'll love them, dear.
And next year we'll send flowers to your mother and eat with mine, okay?
Well, I kind of promised my sister that,
Call your FTD florist and let him help you send flowers to your family this Thanksgiving. He does more with flowers for you.
It's not very often that a loser comes out a winner. But Senator Edmund Muskie seems to have done it. Some people think the smart thing for President-elect Nixon to do would be to give Muskie a tough appointment, Secretary of Defense, so that by the time 1972 gets here, he'd be too unpopular to be a threat for the presidency. Whatever the future holds, Senator Muskie was in a reflective mood this week when he was questioned by Monitor reporter Linda Sutter.
Do you remember any particularly memorable Thanksgiving during the course of your life?
Well, I don't remember any particular one, but I remember the ones that we used to have when I was a boy. Because we were a large family. There were six children. And we were not a wealthy family, but my father was a very skilled tailor and so provided comfortably. And he and my mother always made a big thing of holidays. My mother was an excellent cook, and that turkey was something we always looked forward to. We had it only three times a year, you see. And she made everything that went with it. There was the turkey and then the stuffing. And, and she makes wonderful browned potatoes that no one else has ever been able to make to my satisfaction. And then there was a pudding that she made only those three times a year. It was marshmallow with whipped cream and pineapple. I forget what it's called. But this was a part of those three. And then we always had games. In those days, we didn't have radio or television or any of the modern methods of being entertained. You had to entertain yourselves. So the whole family played cards. We usually had neighbors in, and the neighbors' children and our children played games, and games like, we called it lotto then. It's called bingo now.
Oh, yeah.
And games that there was some competition, and there might be a chocolate for a prize, you know, for those who won, and they got to be pretty hectic. And then it was usually a full day from the time we woke in the morning until we all went to bed at night. It was a family day from beginning to end.
That's a real holiday, too, that kind of thing.
It was the sort of thing you always remember.
Yeah.
You look forward to the next one. Now, you know, in today's affluence, you can have turkey several times a year, and so it isn't quite the glamorous holiday dish that it used to be in those days. Parents had a way of saving treats and making them meaningful in those days, you know, that made for family life. Family life was stronger in those days.
Thank you very much, Senator Muskie.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
This is Linda Sutter reporting for Monitor.
You're on the Monitor Beacon.
How does your child see? You really can't say because you can't look through his eyes. And because he can't look through anyone else's eyes, he has no way of knowing if he's seeing as he should. Because he has nothing to compare to his own vision, a child assumes that the way he sees is the way everyone sees. For this reason, a child can have faulty vision and not complain about it. To be certain that complaints are non-existent and not just unheard, the American Optometric Association suggests annual professional vision examinations for all school children. My name is Jim Gerhardt. I'm on WNBC, Radio 66, New York, weekdays from noon to 3. And if you enjoy good sounds, young, handsome, wealthy, and amusing personalities, join me. When I get off the air, we'll all listen to Charlie Brown together. WNBC, Radio 66, New York.
Here's Engelbert Engelbutt. What's the difference with his name? He's singing about the bicycles.
Turning and turning, the world goes on. We can't change it, my friend. Let us go riding now through the days together to the end. Till the end.
New York City's teachers went back to work after a long and complicated strike. Teachers are in the news around the world these days. We asked George Gallup, Jr., editor of the Gallup Poll, to tell us what his findings are on public attitudes toward the teaching profession. Here's Mr. George Gallup, Jr.
We've just completed an international survey on public attitudes toward the teaching profession, and we find that in most countries, as in the United States, the teacher is held in high esteem by the public. We asked the people of 8 European countries whether or not they would advise a young person to become a teacher. The results were generally favorable. In Switzerland, nearly 9 out of 10 people would recommend that a young person become a teacher, and despite all the uproar about university life in France, nearly 7 out of 10 Frenchmen would advise their young people to enter the teaching profession. Recently, we conducted a Gallup study among the nation's college students in the U.S., asking them what they intended to do upon graduation. Over 1/4 stated that they intended to make teaching their life's work. This proportion far exceeded the percentage who named law, business, medicine, or engineering as the careers they'd most like to follow. It would appear that we will not have any great shortage of teachers, at least in the foreseeable future. All in all, both in this country and around the world, teaching enjoys the respect of the public and the confidence of the oncoming generation. It will be interesting to see whether or not the growing trend toward organizing teachers into labor unions will in the long run affect the esteem with which they are now held in the public's mind. This is George Gallup, Jr. for Monitor.
Here I, the letterman, with Put Your Head on My Shoulder. Olympic ski film Rhubarb. Next up on Monitor Sports. Brought to you by State Farm Fire and Casualty, the world's largest homeowners insurance company.
Hello, I'm Pat Paulson. One night I was sitting in my den trying to relax with a good book in front of a roaring fire. I found it difficult to relax because I don't have a fireplace. Considering the situation carefully, I decided to call the fire department. And I also called my State Farm agent. I called him because I have a low-cost homeowner's policy from State Farm Fire and Casualty, the world's biggest homeowner's insurer. A policy that protects my home and belongings, that covers them in case of fire, storm, theft, that protects me in the event of, perish forbid, a liability lawsuit. Soon I had a check from State Farm to cover damages. I still don't have a fireplace, but I read a lot in front of the furnace.
For your home, your car, your life, and your health. State Farm is all you need to know about insurance.
A ski film by American producer Dick Barrymore showing highlights of the 1968 Winter Olympics has run into legal difficulties. Monitor's Howard Nielsen reports.
Dick Barrymore, recently at Hunter College, ski fans were gathered to watch your annual ski film, and it never came on. What happened?
Well, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I was presented with a temporary restraining order restricting me from showing any footage of the Olympic Games from Grenoble of 1968.
Why were you restricted from showing it?
Well, it seems as though the official film crew that obtained the official film rights from the organizing committee of France is claiming at this point all rights to any footage filmed of the Olympic Games in 1968 at Grenoble, and no one else has the right to show any whatsoever.
Now, there were other people filming at the Olympics in Grenoble. Have they run into similar difficulties to your knowledge?
No, as a matter of fact, one of the very new, well-done, famous films that's being sponsored by one of the leading skiing magazines in the nation, which sponsors that, and one of the leading ski companies, along with one of the leading airlines, has sponsored a very fine film that has a lot of Olympic footage in it. It's very recognizable, but as far as I know, they've run into no opposition, and also my other competitors have run into no opposition as far as showing any of their Olympic footage. I don't know why they, you know, should be so upset about my Olympic footage. Another thing that I'm not sure of is that some people might not be happy in the way that I saw the Olympics, in the way that I differed from the official film as to what really happened in the slalom duel between Jean-Claude Killy and Carl Schranz.
Now, in your interpretation of the duel between Kranz and Killy, where do you differ?
Well, I differ from the fact that in my film, I made a special point that we don't put the blame on Schranz for having to make a third run. We don't put the blame on Killy for having to accept what some people consider a slightly tarnished gold medal. My blame was directed directly at the organizing committee for allowing them to run the race in the fog to begin with, which was, I called it just a ridiculous situation, and it was bad for everybody concerned.
Thank you, Dick Barrymore. This is Howard Nielsen for Monitor Sports.
The right to film the Olympics isn't exactly the fifth freedom. There's a lot of money involved. More Monitor Sports later today.
When the nuclear submarine Skate groped its way under the Arctic ice cap, its commander was James Calvert. Today, Admiral Calvert is the superintendent of the U.S. Naval Academy at Annapolis. Life magazine goes below the surface of the energetic and thoughtful commander of the midshipman. In a close-up, a submariner rises to Annapolis. Admiral Calvert gives life his views on education, dissent, the changing role of the military, and his own job at the Naval Academy, where excellence is considered its own reward. Reporting another kind of excellence, Life cameras focus on three athletes from Kenya, medal winners in the 1968 Olympics. The homecoming of Olympic heroes in Life this week. Life magazine, working to bring you a world of information, insight, and ideas. Life.
Central New England Monitor comes to you on WTAG Worcester, 580 on the dial. All the stations speak up here while I pipe down. Morgan, back soon.
You're on the mind.
Monitor. Promises, promises, promises.
Promises, promises, I'm a through with promises, promises now. I don't know how I got the nerve to walk out. If I shout, remember, I'm still free. Now I can look at myself and be proud. I'm laughing out loud. Oh, promises, promises, this is those promises, promises end. I don't pretend that what was wrong can be right. Every night I'll sleep now, no more lies. Things that I promised myself fell apart, but I found my promises, they're kind of promises, can just destroy a life. Oh, promises, those kind of promises, they go into a promised life. Oh, promises, promises, my kind of promises can lead to joy and hope and love.
Morgan here. Later this half hour, we'll hear Olympic champion Peggy Fleming talk about her profession and her passion, ice skating. If you'd rather watch than skate, you'll have your chance tonight when Peggy stars in a television special on NBC. Ring Around the World, a weekend series of close-ups of people and events. Our Paris correspondent reports on French reaction to President de Gaulle's decision not to devalue the franc in 1 minute. Brought to you by Newsweek, the one news weekly that separates fact from opinion. Have you ever had the feeling that you'd been cut adrift in a sea of conversation? That lost-at-sea feeling is a terrible one, but it's no reason to insulate yourself against the rewards you find in the enjoyable world of uncharted, unchanneled exchange of ideas. And Newsweek magazine can be your lighthouse in the shifting tides of spontaneous talk. Newsweek covers, concisely and completely, everything of significance that goes on everywhere in the world every week. Newsweek takes the time to think, to consider, to sift out what's important from the stream of daily events. Newsweek reports big things big and small things small. Gives you a sense of perspective because it puts the news into focus. Above all, Newsweek is bright, lively, and aware. So outfit yourself with the equipment to sail into any conversation. Pick up a copy of the current issue of Newsweek and see for yourself why it's the world's most quoted news weekly. Then, every week from now on, read Newsweek, the one news weekly that separates fact from opinion. Now here's George Lewis, NBC News, Paris.
President de Gaulle tonight sought to reverse the tide of fortune in a brief radio speech just as he did last May 30th when his stern words brought France back from the apparent brink of revolution. A master of psychology, this time he attempted to apply his mastery to economics and finance. His message was really at two levels. He exhorted the French people to sacrifice and tried to stir their pride in his decision not to devalue the franc. He was also telling a dubious world that he intends making the fight to restore financial order in France one of the great battles of his stormy career. But the immediate reaction here is doubt that Gaullist oratory will be enough this time to stem the tide. The doubt arises not from skepticism about de Gaulle's own intentions, but over whether the French people are prepared to accept the burden of sacrifices he's demanding, simply, as many of them see it, to rescue his own prestige. The French have a poor record for this kind of economic discipline. Only 2 months ago, for example, currency controls imposed during the May crisis were lifted because they proved unenforceable. Now they're being put on again, but how much more effective will controls be this time? One certainty is that his own ambitious international policies will have to be scrapped in order to wrest sacrifices from the average citizen here. The average Frenchman is no longer in the mood to support de Gaulle's luxuries if he's not going to be allowed any of his own. George Lewis, NBC News, Paris.
Ring Around the World was also brought to you by State Farm.
Hi, I'm Phil Foster. The other night, an old friend comes up to me in the street and says, "Hey, Phil, is it really true that State Farm Fire and Casualty, the world's biggest homeowners insurer, has such low rates that you have plenty of money left over every month?" "Right," I says. "Good," he says. "Then give me that $5 you owe me."
For your home, your car, your life, and your health, State Farm is all you need to know about insurance.
Here's the young man from Delight, Arkansas, singing about the fellow from Wichita, Kansas, Glenn Campbell.
I am a lineman for the county, and I drive the main road, searching the sun for another.
on the monitor beacon. The Vogue's on monitor with Till.
In the 1900s, the per capita consumption was only 49 cigarettes a year. By 1930, that figure was 1,400. By the 50s, smoking research was going on all over the world. Per capita consumption has now reached 4,200 cigarettes a year, and death rates have increased accordingly. Write for Facts About Smoking and Health, U.S. Public Health Service, Washington, D.C., 20201. It's free.
Now, my favorite and yours, everybody's, Leapy Lee with Little Arrows.
There's a boy, a little boy, shooting arrows in the blue, and he's aiming them at someone, but the question is at who? Is it me or is it you? It's hard to tell until you're hit, but you'll know it when they hit you, cause they hurt a little. Pouring out of the blue. A little arrow's for me and for you. You're falling in love again, falling in love again. Little arrows in your clothing, little arrows in your hair. When you're in love, you'll find those little arrows everywhere. Little arrows that will hit you once and hit you once again.
Some folks are run and others hide, but there ain't nothing they can do. And some folks put on armor, but the arrows go straight through. So you see, there's no escape, so why not face it and admit that you love those little arrows when they hurt a little bit. Here they come pouring out of the blue. Little arrows in your clothing, little arrows in your hair. When you're in love, you'll find those little arrows.
Next time you hear that record, if you listen carefully, you'll hear him say, Escape, which is about his 11th or 12th error. Escape. There's something glamorous about girl figure skaters, isn't there? You don't have to be crazy about athletics to enjoy watching Peggy Fleming win an Olympic gold medal or three world figure skating championships. Tonight, you can watch her make a professional TV debut on NBC. Monitor reporter Art Fleming, no relation to Peggy, interviewed the young lady who was originally from California.
Peggy, doesn't it seem strange to you that a world's champion figure skater should be a native of California, sometimes called the tennis center of the world?
Well, I think California, especially Los Angeles, we have about 30 rinks in the Los Angeles area. They're inside. And I think skating is becoming more popular through watching television and reading in more magazines. And I think Los Angeles is really a good center for skating.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, a champion tennis player or even a skier may practice for as much as 20 hours a week, they say, but a champion figure skater has to practice 40 or 50 hours a week. Why is that?
Well, skating, you know, is the kind of sport, if you're off one day, you can feel like you've been off almost 2 weeks.
Really?
And you just have to keep training and training, do everything over and over and over again until it comes second nature.
Well, doesn't it become dull for you to go over and over the same routines day in and day out?
Once in a while, but you can strive for perfection and see it on the ice, on like the compulsory school figures that are 60% of our score. And I don't know, I think it's kind of challenging to me. I love, you know, both of the aspects of skating, the free skating and the figures.
So you have to, when you are in training, devote 7 days a week?
I had 6 days a week, and maybe on Sunday I'd only skate maybe 1 or 2 hours.
And on the other days?
I'd skate about 6 hours a day.
6 hours a day, consecutive hours, or it's a split?
No,
up three
it's
three.
Split up. Uh-huh. In the morning I started at 5:30, and then went to school, and then came back to the rink after school, and did a few hours, and then went home, got dinner, and came back again.
That's a full day. Okay. Would you give any advice to young girls today who are listening to you here on Monitor about skating?
Well, I think skating is a great sport for a girl because, you know, she can remain looking like a girl when she's out there, but yet she is an athlete. And, you know, you can compete in the Olympics, and it's a wonderful thrill for somebody to ever even be part of the team. And I know that feeling is just so great. I just, you know, felt so proud. And, you know, when you first start skating, you shouldn't try to, you know, set a goal like you want to be the Olympic gold medal winner at the very start. You should just really enjoy it. And if you don't enjoy it and you have to be pushed, I don't think you're the right person for skating. You have to really have it in your heart to go on, because if you are out there like 6 hours a day and you don't enjoy it, it's going to be misery.
How would you like to spend your Thanksgiving? Where and with whom?
Well, this Thanksgiving I'll be skating in Syracuse, New York. I'll be with the Ice Follies, and I'll probably be spending it with my uncle. He's my mother's brother, and then a friend of mine is coming in and spending Thanksgiving with me.
Well, good. There is family then in yes. Thanksgiving for you. Could you tell us, too, what have you to be especially thankful for this year?
Well, I think this year has been very, very good to me. Winning the gold medal is something that I think would thrill just about anybody, and it was a great feeling for me. I loved every minute of it, and it was a very proud thing to bring home this year, and I really enjoyed it. I think it's been a very good year for me.
Well, believe me, it's thrilling for me just to know somebody who has won a gold medal. We've been talking with Peggy Fleming, world's champion figure skater and star of the television special Here's Peggy Fleming on NBC TV tonight.
Buddy Rich.
Ring with the Odd Couple. For the complete news, stay with NBC, then we'll be back with more Monitor. Morgan here.
The more we hear, the more we learn. To keep well informed is of major concern. So listen.